Starting Perek Gimel, the Beru Chelkei HaZehirus. There's one point that I wanted to mention yesterday, and I didn't get a chance to, so I just wanted to mention it now, which also connects to what we're about to read. We're describing, broadly now, the idea of differentiating between what's good in the world and what's good within us, and identifying those two points, and building a Cheshbon Nefesh to identify that. I just wanted to mention one point. We spoke yesterday about the Yetzer Hara. We spoke about seeing the Yetzer Hara as something which is external to you, and not something which is inherently part of you. The way the world, Western broad philosophy right now is quite interesting in the following way. In Judaism, there's a very clear distinction between good and evil. Good is aligned with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Evil is also an agent of Hashem, but it's clearly there to trip you up, give you a challenge. As you overcome that challenge, you come close to Hashem. That only works when you have very clear guidelines. As we spoke yesterday, Sofer Rasha LeTzadik, the way that he confuses you is by saying who's the Rasha and who's the Tzadik. The way that you overcome him is by very clearly identifying, I am the Tzadik, and the Yetzer Hara is the Rasha. And when you have those clear boundaries between who you are and who the Yetzer Hara is, you're able to say, I know who I am, I'm staying strong. Even when I'm attacked with the challenge of the Yetzer Hara, I know what it's doing, I know that it's sent by Hashem, I know its purpose, I identify its tricks. That's bad, I'm good. And because I'm able to identify myself as good, I'm able to hold strong. If I wouldn't know exactly who I was, if I would have an identity crisis and not know, am I the good, am I the bad? Then once the Yetzer Hara would awaken within me a little bit of the bad, I would say, oh, I've got some of that in myself as well. Like if, going back to the example of sales again, because the Yetzer Hara is a tremendous salesman. If the Yetzer Hara would come to you and say to you, do you want to do this? And you'd say, not really, not really. Not really means, is a part of you that doesn't, part of you that doesn't? So you say, yeah, kind of. 99% I don't want to do this. Oh, so that 1%, what's that 1%? How can we help you give an answer to that part of you that wants it? No, but I said 99% I don't want to do it. Yeah, but there's a part of you that wants it. How can we give that part an answer? Because you need to answer that part of yourself as well. That's what the Yetzer Hara would say. Saying if there's something in you that it's not clear who you are, and you say I'm 99% good and 1% bad, the Yetzer Hara will pick up on that 1% bad, and he'll say, you have to be true to yourself. This is who you are. You have that element of you. You have to answer that need that you have to be true to yourself of the 1%. So if you're not clear exactly who you are, and you say, I'm overall good, but I have some bad in me, then the Yetzer Hara can pick up on that bad. The only way you can overcome the Yetzer Hara clearly is when you say, that's clearly the Yetzer Hara. That's bad, and I'm good. Like Moshe Rabbeinu with Shevet Levi said, Mila Hashem Eli, and they stepped over the line. I am on the side of good. So what I wanted to add about the world, the Western world, is something interesting. I don't know if everyone who does this, and many, many people in the room here do this, but I'm not sure if everyone's aware that this is where it comes from, or even if it's not the reason why it comes, which I do think it is, but even if it's not, that's at least what it does lend itself to, is that there is a confusion in words, in the modern slang, whereby, when someone wants to say something is good, they'll use a word that's bad. So for example, someone wants to say something's amazing, they'll say, that's sick. Or they'll say, that's wicked. Or they'll find another word which is negative, and in Hebrew as well, in modern Hebrew as well, they'll take a word which the word itself is negative, but they'll say it in the connotation of positive. Why is that in our era? How is that developed? Why is that the way of speech? Because in our era, there's a desire to confuse lines. You thought that a man is a man and a woman is a woman? Not necessarily. No, the lines there aren't so clear anymore. You thought that good is good and bad is bad? Not necessarily. Good could be bad, bad could be good. And then one doesn't have the strength to identify, I am good, this is bad, and I can hold strong against it. So it's somewhat inappropriate that a person responds to something which is positive by giving a negative word. Because then in their inner mind, in their psyche, that's a good thing. When they would read, let's say a person uses the word wicked in a good context. Right? So when they would read about someone who's a Rasha, and they're reading in the Chumash about a Rasha, and they go, he's wicked, he's wicked. But he's bad, he's evil. He goes, yeah, that's so cool. No, it's wrong. It's against Torah. It's against Hashem. Awesome. No, you can't even speak. You get confused and you're in a world. Because those words have become to be associated with positivity. One can fully overcome the Yetzer Hara when they have a full recognition of I am good. And I know what good is. And I know what bad is. And I have clear boundaries and guidelines. So I'm setting that out just as a guideline of speech. That even if no one means those things, and anyone who uses those words intends them in a context of I mean to say good and I know what I mean, even though you know what you mean, it doesn't matter. Because the terms become confused in one's mind. And when one comes to relate afterwards to Torah ideas, we're not able to receive them in that pure way because there's other connotations they have with them. And that's the trick of the Yetzer Hara. It's one of his tricks, where he confuses your guidelines of what's good and what's bad. And instead of you identifying yourself as a tzaddik and him as a rasha, you identify rasha as good. And then a person gets confused in that manner. If a person wants to be aware of himself and overlook himself, to build himself, there are two guidelines, two outlooks that a person needs to have. And I just want to point out that even before we say what the two things are, it's he began with the word rotzeh. It has to come from a place of will. He didn't say tzaricha adam. He said harotzeh lefakeh. In this area of avodas Hashem, it's not going to help to command. So you can command someone to do an external action. Shake a lulav of an esrog. You cannot command someone to do a cheshbon nefesh. That's their inner world. If they have that sensitivity, you can command someone to take out pen and paper and write. But to have the hisbonenus, the contemplation of the inner world in an authentic manner, that only comes from a place of will. The person wants to. What you can do is you can explain why it's so important, and hopefully they'll be listening. But even then, they have to have a will to listen. So the Ramchal, just from the beginning, brings out the only way that this can be accomplished is if a person has ratzon. And then he adds, alatzmo. Why does he say alatzmo? Because many people have the will to give critique on others. People are actually very good at cheshbon nefesh of other people. They're fantastic at that. You know what you need? You know what you need? You know what your problem is? I'll think about my problem myself. What's your problem? I don't have any problems. I'm telling you your problem. So the Ramchal from the beginning says, lefakech al atzmo. Pay attention to yourself before you start giving critique to other people. So rotzeh lefakech al atzmo has to have two outlooks. There are two guidelines that a person needs. Number one, shiyitbonen mahu atov amiti, shiyivchar bo haadam v'haraha amiti shianus mimenu. One is nothing to do with you, it's objective. It's look in the world. And I want to add that when it says here, look at the world, what's the true good and what's the true bad, it's interesting that he used the word true. Tova amiti, v'raha amiti. Because the word good has many definitions. What's good for me might not be good for you. And there are many people out there in the world will say, I do what makes me feel good. But the way you know if something is tov amiti is if it's eternal. If it's long-lasting. Anything which is short-lasting is not amiti. It doesn't have an effect throughout the world. So all the short-term pleasures are good, short-term. But they're not building something which is eternal. We're looking here for the tova amiti, shivchor bo ha'adam. Not things that give a short-term pleasure, but rather which give a person values, which will last for eternity. I want to break down Tova Amiti and Ra Amiti into two different categories of how you know. There's one how you know because the Torah says so. And you read in the Torah and you learn the Torah's guidelines. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's the manufacturer. And he gave you a handbook. You can directly see what's good and what's bad from reading from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You'll save yourself a lot of time that way. You won't need to figure out the answer yourself. You'll directly get the answer from the one who made the world in that way. But in order for it to be Amiti for you, and again, we've spoken many times here, we're building olamo, our inner world. It also has to resound with you. It also has to make sense to you. If you only follow what the Torah says, but it doesn't resound with you, you won't see it as tov amiti. You'll see it as a tov external. It's good, but it's not me. On the contrary, if you only go with what resounds with you, what feels good to you, but that's not in line with Torah, then you'll follow any whim, any desire that comes your way, and it won't be a long-lasting good. In order for a person to clarify Tov Amiti, and this is even before you get to yourself, you have to look in the world for two things. One, where the Torah is, and two, where the Torah resounds with people. Where people learn Torah and they learn in a way that they connect, they fulfill Torah in a way they connect. So you could go out to communities and you could find people who seem to be very happy and they're really enjoying their lives. But it's not in line with Torah. So it's Tov, but it's not Amiti. Or, alternatively, you can also find people who are fulfilling Torah. But when you try and relate to them, they don't seem to be connecting. They don't seem to have satisfaction with their life. They relate to the Torah and the Mitzvot as a big burden, which they're actually waiting to get rid of if they can in some way, but they just feel obligated to, so they don't. That's also not Tov Amiti. It's Tov. They're doing the will of Hashem. But it's not Amiti. Because it doesn't resound with them. It's not them. They're not the ones doing it. They're acting in a way which is the correct way to act. But it's not them. So when we're being instructed here to look in the world for the Tov Amiti and the Ra Amiti, we're looking for both that which is within the guidelines of Hashem and where it speaks to the people who are doing it. When you relate to them, they seem like they're authentically happy. I don't know how to explain what I'm about to say now. I wish I did have an answer for it, but I just want to share something, which is I'm going to leave it at Tzaruch Iyun. There's an amazing woman, I think she lives in Canada, maybe she's in Aliyah, called Lori Palatnik. And she founded a program which brings non-religious, initially it was women, now it's men as well, out to Israel in order to experience Israel with the goal that long-term they'll become associated with Torah. And it's about a 10-day trip, and the way the trip works is it starts off with more what those people would call fun, going to Tel Aviv and hanging out in Tel Aviv. And then as the days goes on, there's more and more meaningful experiences. And by the end of the trip, it's like very intensely religious, spiritual experiences, meeting great people and hearing amazing talks. And it's a free trip. Anyone who wants to come to Chutz Lachutz, not religious, can come on this trip for free. But they have to make a commitment of learning once a week with a religious partner. With a different organization called Partners in Torah. They set them up and they learn for a week. The reason I know about it is my wife was a partner for women who went on this Lori Palatnik program. Twice she's done it with people who had a commitment for a year and she loved it. Anyways, this Lori Palatnik, she said that people have asked her a question she doesn't know how to answer, and I don't know how to answer it either. She brought women who came from, let's say, America to certain neighborhoods, and these women who came were not religious, but they had joy of life. They enjoyed their lives. There were people who don't, but there were those who do. And when they came and they interacted with, I'm not talking about the speakers who they were presented with. Those were obviously people who were, they chose people who were successful. But the regular housewife scurrying around the shops, which they saw when they were in certain neighborhoods, didn't seem to have a joy of life. Just seemed to be going around what they need to be doing. Now, it could be, very well be, that's a tsinius way. And they don't want to show that element externally. But when you see them with their families, when you see them with their groups of neshe, then there they express fully their joy and their joy of life. But Lori Palatnik said, she was like sending this as a letter out to the religious community and saying, I don't know what to answer these women when they ask me that question. Could someone help me understand? And she sent that letter out to the kind of group. I don't know the answer either. But what we're looking for is where you have both. Where you have both that a person is fulfilling Torah and mitzvahs, and at the same time, they're fulfilling Torah mitzvahs in a way which you see that they're enjoying, you see they're connected, you see they have a love of Hashem, and a love of the life that they're living. And that's a Tov Amiti that we're looking for. That's what one thing. Vashenit, and the second thing is, Ala ma'asim ashehu oseh, lirot im heim miklal hatov, o miklal hara. And then after you've identified, it could be concurrently, but obviously it's better that it comes afterwards, in the sense that you have to first know what's really good before you start analyzing who you are. Once you've got an understanding of what the Torah is saying, and who do I see in the world that's fulfilling to Torah in a way that really resounds with them, it's alive by them, there's a joy of life that the Torah is supposed to be giving, and these people are authentically living a Torah life in that way, and they're really connected. Where am I in respect to that? Where are my actions? Where are my thoughts in respect to people who are living their lives like that? where they're fulfilling Torah lives, but they're also connected. And they feel the joy of life by doing it. That's the double cheshbon nefesh you have to make. One is more external, and one is more internal. Identifying tov amiti, Torah lifestyle done in an authentic, vital, vitalizing manner. And second of all, where am I in respect to that? Is that how my kids are going to see me in that way that I see those people? Think about people who you know, either from your community or from the yeshiva, people who you know who, like, they're living a true Torah life. They're doing the will of Hashem and they're doing it with simcha. Think of someone like that. And then ask yourself, and where am I in compared to that? Now, obviously, you don't have to be exactly like them. Everyone has different talents and strengths. Everyone has different challenges. But that point should be equal for everyone. That point of wanting to do the will of Hashem and do it with vitality, it could be expressed in a very different way. It doesn't have to be the same as someone else. You do it in your unique way. But it has to have those two elements. It's that I'm doing the will of Hashem and it gives me vitality. So first of all, identify what's tov amiti. And then identify where am I in respect to that. And this applies in two different times. Both at the time when you were involved in something, shata maaseh, and also other times separately when you're just contemplating. V'shata maaseh shelo yaseh shum maaseh mibli sheyishkol oto v'moznei zot hayediyah. You shouldn't do any action without first contemplating these two points. Now, I want to add one point here before I explain this. There are six constant mitzvahs. To love Hashem, to have fear of Hashem, lo sasuru. There are six constants. If you're interested in them, the first page of Mishnah Berurah. On the first page of the Mishnah Berurah, in the Be'er Halacha, he lists the six constant mitzvahs. Now, what does it mean as a constant mitzvah? Tveikus with Hashem. What does it mean? Does that mean that I'm all the time thinking about it? So I'm not talking to my friends ever, and I'm not eating and thinking about how delicious the food is, and I'm not even learning Torah. So I'm thinking about Tzeikus Hashem. Wait, I have to think about Avos Hashem. Okay, I'm thinking about Avos Hashem. Okay, wait, I have to think about Yerushalayim. Okay, I'm thinking about Yerushalayim. Okay, I have to think about Lotus Torah. Okay. How do you fulfill a constant mitzvah if there are six of them? If you tell me, think about this, don't think about anything else, I can do it. You know, but then you say, think about six things constantly, how can I do that? And live your life normally, how can you do that? So what does it mean if you're given a constant mitzvah? Obviously, it doesn't mean you have to be actively thinking about it the whole time. Rather, what it means is, you have to be living your life in a way where all of the thoughts that you have and the way that you relate to the world is in line with, is in the theme of, is in conjunction with, is in the spirit of those six ideals. So that anything I'm doing right now I'm learning Torah, with the love of Hashem. And at the same time, I'm learning Torah with Yiras Hashem. I'm careful not to say something which is inappropriate. And at the same time, I'm feeling close to Hashem through my learning of Torah. So it's not that I'm thinking of, I must be having dveikus with Hashem. But rather, everything that I'm doing has to be in the context of dveikus with Hashem. A little bit like if you are talking, if you're about to make a conversation to someone, and it's an important call that you have to make. It's really important. A lot depends on it. So you're doing a practice beforehand. So you would allow yourself to joke around in the middle, because you're not actually doing the call yet. And if you like, you realize you said a silly word, you say, oh no, that's terrible, forget that word, let me say something else. You would do that. But if you were actually in the call, and you're with the person right now, you wouldn't say, oh, I shouldn't have used that word, that was a silly word, let me try again. And how embarrassed would you be if you accidentally called them, and you were in your practice call, and you didn't realize they were actually listening, and then you suddenly realized, oh my gosh, they heard it, even if you were saying what you wanted to say to them. But you wouldn't say it in the same way, because you're totally aware, when you're with someone, that you have to be in their context, of what you're saying, and that they're listening. And you're not aware of that when you're doing a practice run. So is it clear that even if you're doing exactly the same thing, there are times where you do it with the awareness that you're with someone and sometimes you're not with the awareness that you're with someone. Right? In that mashal. So when we speak about Dveikus Hashem, Avos Hashem, Yiras Hashem, those mitzvot, it's not that you're thinking, I am loving Hashem right now. It's just that you're aware that you're in a conversation with Hashem. So you're talking about whatever you're talking about. You're involved in whatever you're involved in. But you're going to be careful in everything that you're doing because you're aware that you're with Hashem. So those six constant mitzvahs aren't something you have to actively be thinking of, but it determines and defines and sculpts your entire life within those six constant mitzvahs. So similar to this, when it says that you have to be, at every action that you do, you have to be contemplating, is this action in line with Tov HaAmiti? It doesn't mean that you're halted your whole life. You're about to say something, oh wait, Is it in line with something? Okay, fine, yeah, it is. And you'll say it. You're about to do something. Oh, wait! I didn't think about it. It's not a halted life where you're constantly like checking yourself, am I okay? But rather, like the six constant mitzvahs, like the dveikus with Hashem that we're already describing here, it's that you tune your mind into the will of Hashem. You think constantly, I want to be doing the will of Hashem, to the degree where whatever you're doing, it's clear to you that it has to be within the will of Hashem. If you have a suffix, pause. If you're not sure that what you're about to do now is the will of Hashem, you're having a conversation with a friend, it's not Torah, it's not Lashon Hara, it's somewhere neutral, and you have a story you want to tell. It may or may not be appropriate, you're not sure. So there, pause. Don't just assume you can say it, because you have to pause. Wait, is this Tov Amiti or is this not Tov Amiti? Is this going to be in line with the will of Hashem? If Hashem was sitting here right now by my side, he is, but if I could like imagine that in a more kind of pristine way, then would I tell this story? And if the answer is I'd be a little uncomfortable to tell it, then you probably shouldn't say it. So sometimes it has to be halted, where you have a suffix. You have to stop and pause. But broadly in your life, you can live your life in a very comfortable and a smooth way, with the knowledge that everything you're saying is in line with Hashem. If you have a suffix about it, pause and clarify it. But broadly, you won't need to. It could be that earlier on, you'll need to pause a lot more, because you haven't clarified many actions or many conversations. But as your life develops, it will become much more natural and much smoother as you're aware more what the will of Hashem is, you're aware more what gives you vitality in your way of speaking. So when it says b'sha'at ha'maaseh, it means that when you're about to do an action, you should pause and clarify, is this in line with the will of Hashem? And I was just adding that with time it becomes more and more natural, not that you have to be halted in the way that you do it, it just becomes your whole mindset of how you relate to the world. V'sha'lo b'sha'at ha'maaseh, and this also applies not at the time of doing an action, that you're obligated, and this is the cheshbon nefesh that we've been speaking about, you're obligated to ya'aleh lefanav zikaron klal ma'asav, to pause and think about how you act. Go over your day, go over your year, go over your month, go over the last couple of hours. V'yishkol otam, and contemplate. When I spoke to that person the other day and I said that phrase, at the time I wasn't thinking, I just said it. But could that have been offensive to them? Could it be they took it a different way? It happened to me just the other day. I was talking to someone outside, and I said a phrase, and then I realized that although I know what I meant when I said that phrase, one could interpret that phrase another way, and then it would imply something negative about someone. So I quickly added on another half a sentence where I clarified what I meant by that. And they said, yeah, of course, I understood. But it was important to me because I wasn't sure if that could be taken another way. So that's afterwards, when it's already happened, you pause and you contemplate, could that have been misinterpreted in some way? Was that not actually accomplishing my goal? And what you think of at the other times, Be'ez Hashem, we will continue tomorrow. May it be zocher that we identify those people in our lives, those communities in our lives, where we see them both living their life according to the will of Hashem, and also having vitality in it, and align ourselves with that mindset, with that way of thinking.